Welcome to MS Community Live. How you doing today, Josh?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic. Taylor Swift's new album dropped today. I got some great coffee. Like, I got nothing to complain about.
Coffee's that's where I said. I need more coffee now. I wish I have water here because it's already late enough in the afternoon for me not to be drinking any more coffee, but I'll have another go of it.
I got to give a shout out to Brandon, a.k.a. Giga. He sent me some of these coffee beans, and they're probably the best beans I've had. So I had 3 cups yesterday, and I'm on my my second one today just because they taste so good. So thank you. I definitely need more of those.
Absolutely. Are we ready to roll into our first story?
Yeah, I'm ready to roll. Let's see what we got going on today in the MSP community.
Am I expecting too much from my texts? As soon as I knew I was going to do this show, I'm like, okay, that's going to be one of the ones. This topic comes up and is gets beat up a lot. There's a balance to be kept here. And I'm glad the person edited the post later to talk about some of the salaries, because expectations do have to be aligned with compensation. And there are certainly, and of course, you always have to qualify this, because compensation in California in Silicon Valley is not the same as compensation in the Detroit area where I'm at. So Midwest salaries are dramatically different. So there's always the tempering you have to do around that. But training the techs and getting them certified and dangling a bonus, some type of a pay incentive. Let's start with your thoughts on some of that.
I feel that this person's doing all of the right things. They're providing, paid certification. They're providing a bonus structure, providing a raise structure. But it's something that, whatever the saying, like, you can lead a horse to a water, but you can't make him drink, right? Some people just aren't going to have that ambition or want to do it. I know that was a thing at my previous MSP where I wanted to, I recognized we had an opportunity where no one was really cloud certified, Microsoft cloud certified. So I took it upon myself to take the MS-100, the MS-101, dive in, everything there is to know about that. And then eventually became the AZ-900, AZ-104, AZ-305, plus some specialties. And, it was like, I had the same feeling. I'm like, guys, like other techs, like, and friends, guys, we get bonuses, like when we finish these and we're growing. And there wasn't too many that took advantage of it. So the other side too is, I don't think it was announced in the post at all, but is there time, is he giving him like 2 hours a day to focus on that? Cause that could be the other thing is like, hey, you need to study for these certs and do everything, but I'm also going to overburden you with tickets and you don't have any time to work on it and you got to do it in your free time.
And I think it's one of the top suggestions that was in there was to create a recurring ticket. If it's 2 hours on Wednesday, whatever that number is, whatever that time slot is, you get them to focus for a recurring period of time mm-hmm. as a recurring ticket. This is your study time when you will learn this. And I've talked to, I was actually speaking with my friends at another company last night, and that's how they did their texts. They assigned them block hours to say your tasks, and they gave them a 4-hour block once a week to have an automation task they were working on that they needed. And so 4 hours, that person just had it blocked. He says, we allocated plenty of time. That way you don't have that switching cost where you got an hour, you're in the grind. Here's an hour to study, back to the grind. It's like, nope, here's a 4-hour block that you can expect every Thursday morning that this is what you do. You start working on it. You don't get distracted by everything else. And slowly, and he says they've actually built these incredible level automations, pushing it forward by doing that for the tech. It benefited the company. It's that aggravation that you go, I want all my text time billable. I want them smarter.
Well, and you can't expect them, that if somebody is ambitious, not everyone is going to be as ambitious or motivated as other people. I know myself when I was studying those Azures, like that's all I did was I ate, slept, breathed like Azure. I'd go home and study. I'd put the kids to bed, and as I'm in the hallway, while they're falling asleep, I'm looking at the Microsoft Learn and doing those. I don't suggest other people do that. That was just something that I wanted to do because I wanted to grow. But at the same time, it's you have to have that work-life balance.
Yeah.
And if I had a long day at work or a long, you know, week at work, and you know, like is a 5K bonus worth me studying for 3 hours a night on my own time? Like, no, you know, I value my time more than that.
Well, and I'm among the people, so I empathize with other people like me. I last took a test in high school. I have not done, I've, you know, 25 years of my tech career, I have no certifications, never bothered with them. And I don't like test taking. I don't know what I would do if I had to take a test today, as I haven't done a test in, well, over 25 years. So some people I know are very nervous. They choke. They don't really, the testing can be very hard for them. Yep. And it's not always, I get it from my hiring standpoint to want someone to have some validation. It becomes a good reason. But once you're hired and you know that they're a good performing tech, we're setting the goals a little bit different, even at my company, where we're just designing workshops for them to do, so to speak, or challenges. We even talked about setting up as a CTF of the flag, like setting up this server under these configuration guidelines. You have time allocated to do it. This is how you get on the leaderboard on our, like a, running it like a CTF almost, where we have, here's the flag, here's the goals you have to get to, which proves competency in doing it. And unlike testing, we're not, Google your way through this while you do it, because either way, the goal is to have you accomplish it, even if Google's open in the next tab where you're going, what's the command to do this? Because reality is, when you're fixing problems, I don't turn off your internet. You fix the problem for the client with access to our knowledge base, access to guides, access to the documentation for the product, and of course, the wonderful Stack Exchange repos replies that have something in there.
That was actually... until you get the one that says, hey, does anyone have this problem? And then never mind, fixed it. And like, you just like 3 years ago, you know, where did this come from? That was actually going to bring up to my exact next point, is some of those, like the testing, like there was a coworker at my last job. He's actually one of my best friends. He's been in the IT industry just as long as I have, just has the experience, but he's not a good test taker. Right. And it's really unfair to judge that. He knows what he's doing. You know what you're doing. Just because I have a stack of certs and you don't, like, you have the more experience, like, you know what the hell you're doing. And just because I memorized random Azure facts without having to look them up doesn't mean I'm any, you know, any better. And I'm glad that Microsoft actually changed that to where you can use Microsoft documentation, because when I was doing those projects and those things, I'm not going to do it off the cuff. I'm going to have Microsoft documentation and Google up on my other monitor to make sure that I'm doing things right. And that's, so, you know, maybe it is a thing with the certifications, but when it comes to the MSP world, there are benefits to the business on getting them. You know, if you have those certifications, your Microsoft partner level can go up, or certain vendor certifications as well. And even vendors will pay for those. I know, you know, various like networking vendors and things like that, you know, different partner levels. But the other thing, and this is maybe a different tangent to go down, is I think we both agree that experience kind of trumps all of that. You know, the certifications that are degrees are a great way to get a foot in your door. They're obviously great to have. There's no downsides to having them, but I will take experience every time over someone's test taking ability.
Well, and one of the things too that it was funny, this came up in the other day in my live stream, is there's no good certification for people who actually know how to Google things. And I'll admit, I was working with some internal staff last week, and I watched them Google things. I'm like, boy, you don't know the Google tricks. Like, why isn't that? That needs to be in parentheses. You need this. You need to minus this, because that way you land on the page you want, not fluff results, because God forbid tech names not have name collision with other products. You know, let's just call this language Rust. That surely won't collide with any search anyone does for anything. So
I'm looking for this problem, and all I get is a Call of Duty map. What?
Exactly. So I think there's probably more emphasis you put on the ability to search, the ability to problem solve and walk them through that. Of course, there's no cert for being able to problem solve or being able to use Google properly, but maybe we'll get there one day, because that's my secret skill, is I don't know what the answer is, but I know what terms to put it into Google to find it. And I will definitely answer this question. Are the Google tricks going away since AI is much more efficient? No, not at all. No way. Matter of fact, the thing I joke about AI so much, and one, it's not a predictive outcome. So the computers are highly deterministic. It's ones and zeros leading up to, once we know the parameters in there, a deterministic output. This is exactly what will happen. These ones and zeros line up to occur this way. That means to solve that problem, there's a exact answer. There may be different approaches, but there's an exact science to it. AI gives us fuzzy answers. And that means in some ways is worse, because I was actually pulling up book quotes. I said, hey, summarize this book. And AI does a great job of that, or does it? It gave me five quotes. I realized one of them wasn't from the book. And I'm like, wait a minute here. Only because I read the book and I just wanted a summary, because someone says, hey, what's some good quotes from the book? And I just read it. And I said, rather than me paraphrasing, why don't I grab the phrases out of the book? It pulled a phrase that didn't exist in that book. But it confidently told me it did. So if I would have told that to someone, is I even double checked. I'm like, did I miss that part of the book? That is from a different book this person wrote. It is from the right person, but only because I freshly read it. And that's where AI being able, if you're not talented enough or experienced enough to understand that it's the wrong answer. My friend shared some screenshots. He was using some of the tools. He wanted to write a Windows cleanup utility with Copilot. I love what it did. Copilot did this. It decided that you should delete all directories. It wrote the code for this to delete all directories except for the Windows directory to clean up your hard drive.
I mean, it's not wrong.
Windows would still be there. He goes, yeah, but every program is gone and Windows would be broken. Include the user directory. It literally wrote basically RMRF exclude Windows. And he's just like, I can't believe it wrote this. This is wonderful. He goes, and awful. And if I was not an experienced technician, it would be funny to run this.
Oh, man. I was just actually going to bring that up about using ChatGPT or Bard or whatever for PowerShell. I've used it a couple times and it's spit out, you know, hey, do this thing. And it's like, all right, here's your PowerShell thing. And I'm pretty proficient with PowerShell and I'm looking at it. And my favorite part is when you tell it, that doesn't like, that's not a PowerShell query you can give. And it's like, oh yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. Like, yeah. Try this instead. I'm like, hold on here. If you knew it wasn't, why didn't you give it to me the first time?
Yeah.
So, you know, even, to Travis's point here, you still have to have the base knowledge and you still have to be able to Google to verify, you know, the trust, but verify the AI side.
I actually think AI would help techs better with soft skills because how do I explain these printer? How do I explain this person? HP sucks. I want to reply. HP sucks. Please put into it. This is where AI would do a great job. Yeah. Please explain to users why printers are terrible. And it'll write two paragraphs, send it to the user. Cool. They're now I got a response that isn't the response, because I think the next topic we can cover, which is, I think it's the a-holes in the MSP. IT industry as a whole. Well, AI can maybe help these people temper, because I think you can ask AI this and it will give you a good predict. AI is really a predictive word system. And if you put in the a-hole statement that you want to make versus AI, please make me sound less like an a-hole so I can send this email to a client. I think that is a great use for AI and would make your texts seem less like a-holes.
Yes. Or I like how it tries to be more empathetic too, because it'll tell you, and then it's like, remember, like, these people's feelings are, etc. Like, it gives you the counterpoints and purposely tries not being angry. So absolutely use it for that.
It's a good use. And I through this whole comment thread, there's the commonality to the things we see in technical fields, high level fields, where it takes a pretty high level of understanding to be able to do what we do. When you look at, especially the hacking world that I spend part of my time in, you go to a hacking conference and you meet the people who are the top ranked people. They're also rarely are they the socially good with language people. They're like, I did this entire, you know, top CTF. I was able to capture these flags. I was able to reverse engineer these binaries, but they're not always the same people that can also be kind about it. And it's not that they're necessarily intentionally being that way. I think it's because no one told them not to be that way, that they're very short. And if you're someone who expects more politeness or a more expanded how's the weather conversation, they fall short of that because they've never been trained in it.
Well, and I don't think that this is something that's just IT. I mean, I think it plagues every industry, like lawyers, doctors, accountants. like the more specialized, you know, things. Like, I mean, my wife has been in the healthcare industry for pretty much her whole career, and you have doctors who know, you know, everything there is to know about a very specific thing, but they have absolutely no personal skills. They can just go around being an a-hole to whoever, you know, they're not a good person, or maybe they lack a lot of common sense, but they know everything there is to know, you know, about a very specialized subject, like a heart or whatever.
Yes. I will leave his name, cause it's unique off here, cause he would make it identifiable. We have a client, and the client's great, but they got that one guy. And you can't meet him without he likes to let everyone know he's got a doctorate in particle physics, cause he does. The company designs and builds they design x-ray machines to do metallurgy. This is very complicated stuff. It's cutting edge. They can see inside and they can tell you the fatigue of metal on a plane with these scanning machines and stuff like that. So it takes a lot of engineering knowledge to be able to build something like that. And they, from start to finish, they machine fabricate everything they do there. And this guy is the brainiac behind a lot of it. He's an employee. He's not the owner. in every email, he's got every one of his doctorate, all kinds of related things. And if you meet him, that's the first thing he lets you. Did you know I have a doctorate in particle? I just want to let you know I have a doctorate in particle physics, or I can't remember exactly what it is now. He's insufferable. And his requests are, he complains about the way software is written, because apparently he has strong opinions about that. That's why we interact with him way more than we ever want to. Well, his tickets, though, there are sometimes three paragraphs to his tickets, and all it is him wanting to make a minor change to his computer. It's like, he writes so much and has so many opinions of how things should be done. This is how you guys should approach this ticket. He instructs us. Yep. It is wild. It's almost like, hey, he wrote one again. We kind of sit around and read it. We're like, wow.
Well, I mean, to the other point, you know, let's talk about the MSP industry. I mean, there are people who get into IT because they might be introverted, and they're like, hey, if I work with IT, I, you know, can work in computers. I can, you know, hide in the server room where no one can get me without badged entry and just do my job, which is nice some days, don't get me wrong. But the MSP, I mean, it's a managed service provider. Providing a service. And I know I've said this on multiple, you know, MSP Live or other webinars that I've done or been on. It is a customer service industry, service first. And yes, you do need IT skills. Those are table stakes. But what really sets someone apart is the ability to build the relationships, build the partnerships, and have the social skills. So, you know, if you are looking for more of an introverted, you know, that maybe an internal IT or a programming thing is more kind of your style. But having those soft skills is so important to have in every, again, not just IT, I think in every industry and every whatever position you're being in.
Yeah. Learning the soft skills is probably the biggest.
I always say you can teach somebody what buttons to push on a keyboard, but
yeah, I admit fully at a young age, I was insufferable, and only because the company cared about me. They actually had a management coach that came in and did training, and he spent some time with me. As a matter of fact, the first 5 minutes of sitting with him, he told me I was quite the a-hole, and that's why he was here. And I was like, it caught me off guard for someone to tell me that, but I'm so happy he did. I actually learned a lot, and I became a better person because of it. Because I, at a very young age, had a really good career in tech, which of course meant I was smarter than everyone, and I was really willing to tell you that. And if you argued with me, I'd say, look, I have a cool job and I make a lot of money. Yep. Ha ha. And turns out that's really poor form, and I was quite the ass when I was younger. But I learned and got much better, and I'm happy this happened to me very young. I was like 20 at the time, which I think a lot of 20-year-olds are generally insufferable sometimes. that's the nature of that age too. Sometimes when you're young, you kind of you can have a little bit of an attitude. But yeah, learning those soft skills, and there is even a term for it. Even if you are someone who actually is on the spectrum, the term is just masking. You learn how to incorporate. It's not necessarily easy. Some people, this is why they find lots of social situations very exhausting, is because they're spending a lot of time kind of being more social than they actually are, and that can have a toll on them. Like, they need to socially recharge. They don't want to spend all day at an event with lots of people. But learning those skills and having to be polite on the phone will help your career greatly. It'll actually make your job faster because you can now interact with people better, and your cooperation with coworkers will go a long way. So there are coping mechanisms for it, but there's, in the nature of the beast, like you said here, there's going to be a lot of people that fit that that are in our industry because of the skills needed to do what we do.
Well, then you get the people that are like, well, you know, I'm an a-hole because I'm the grizzled veteran, you know, the gray beard who's seen everything in 20 years of, you know, I just get angry because, you know, the users, they always say they reboot, they never do, and I have to drive 5 hours because someone, you know, didn't plug a printer in. But I have quite a bit of experience, and you do too. I think it's actually made me calmer because, you know, it's like, well, yeah, you know, I've seen this, like, it's not an emergency. We'll get through it. Like, no one's going to die.
I think there's two paths, and there's the path, like maybe me and you were taking, where I've been in this a long time and I realize what I don't know. So I'm always curious and I've seen this before and I'm calm about it, versus that person who locked in and they think Windows 7 was the best version ever made. Everything, everything that came after sucks. And yes, then you suck too, because you haven't been doing this as long as me and you don't understand why all software sucks after Windows. Like, they get locked into, this is where they progressed and this is where their fork in the road was, you know, green screen. After that, it was downhill and deck. What are you still doing? Look, green screen, man. That's where it stopped.
I think we covered that one pretty well. So you'll find a-holes in every industry, not just IT. Just be a nice person, everyone. That's all you can do.
What's the etiquette in telling clients you're leaving the MSP? And I think the top answer nailed it here. Whatever your boss says it is, which is usually saying nothing. I wanted to cover this from someone's perspective as a boss who has employees who are no longer there that were very interactive with the clients. So I did not want, or at all, for that person to go around telling everybody that they left. They parted ways. They left. They chose not to work there. They were not canned or anything like that. So the question came up, where'd they go? And I said, well, they chose a different path. You know, it's my generic, simple answer I have to the clients. And I said, you know, I wished them well, et cetera. That being said, there's certainly, I don't want that person, not for non-compete reasons or anything like that. I just don't think it's an awkward conversation. People will think too much about it. And I get it, because they interact a lot with the clients. They feel compelled to tell them. But honestly, there's nothing good that comes from that. It's an interaction that you don't necessarily want. Your boss may have a completely different opinion of you going and contacting your customers, even if it's not for a competitive reason. It's an awkwardness of it, because now I don't know what was said to them. And this person did interact a couple times with clients, because we have clients and he happened to buy services, unrelated to tech, from that client. So they now know he left, and he gave his own version of the story, and it became awkward a little bit when I interacted with the client. But yeah, saying nothing, that's the best way to just part ways. If you're going to leave a place, make your choices, wander off somewhere else, and let the people that own the business handle how they want to do the optics on it. It's just going to be easier. It saves you some awkward interactions with people.
So I'm going to play devil's advocate on this, be the tech. You've made those personal and professional connections. You don't want to just sever them, you know, so you're kind of in a tricky place. You know, especially if you have, you know, some like key clients or things like that, like I feel you wouldn't just want to leave them. I feel you wouldn't want to leave them in the dark. You know, this has happened to me twice, and I can't say that I didn't say anything. Like, I'll give you what, you know, personally did, and maybe it's right, maybe it's wrong. I was very heavily involved with client interactions. I love, you know, making partnerships and, you know, getting to know the clients, you know, better. Like, if I would go on site to somebody, you know, we'd be talking about whatever, like figuring out, just something to talk about, whether it's sports or things. And I've made a lot of great connections over the years. So when I did leave, you know, my first MSP, my second MSP, there was a couple of the clients that I was closer to that I reached out, and, you know, I wasn't like, hey, I'm moving to another MSP or moving to something else. Like, come follow me. Like, that wasn't the thing. It was just, you know, hey, I've decided to take a different position. I really enjoyed, you know, working with you guys. If you need anything, you know, please, you know, contact, like, here's who you be your new contact or whatever. Like, and then to the MSP, like, I'm very much like an, you know, never burn bridges. So, you know, to the MSP, it's too, is like, hey, I don't work with you guys, and obviously I'm not going to work on a contracting basis, but, like, you know, reach out and let me know, you know, if this client calls about this specific thing, like, don't go digging through it. Just shoot me a text and I'll be like, yeah, hey, do this, you know, try to make it easier for everybody. So I'm conflicted because I personally have done and probably would do a, hey, great working with you, I'm moving on, like, let's connect on LinkedIn if we're not already, and, like, stay in touch, because I value those relationships and I want to keep them.
I actually agree. Keeping professional relationships, I'm perfectly fine with. Like, I don't have any objection. Connecting on LinkedIn, having that outside of relationship to some extent. And I think there can be a good job when there's that, is letting the people know, you know, I very generically, this person left a little bit abruptly when they didn't want to, you know, they decided they were not going to survive the merger. Well, they chose not to, I should say. So it was very abrupt. They said they were going to and then changed their mind. And I said, oh, okay, is what it is. And I had no problem, because one of the things they said they were going to do, but they actually didn't pursue, was pursue a job at one of the clients, which is unrelated to tech. They wanted a job at a client doing specifically to that industry, because they wanted to make a complete career pivot to a different industry. And I was like, dude, go for it. Hey, if you can work there and do that thing that they do, awesome. I have no problem. This is not a conflict of interest at that point at all. You won't be working in any capacity under that. So, you know, I've never been the hard line with any of them, but I think your approach is not wrong either for doing it. You've got to figure out, each situation is different. When you're not trying to burn the bridge, and I've had plenty of people that have come and gone over the years, because having a company for 20 years means some of them come and go, but no burning bridges. People tell me, you know, hey, I got another job offer, I'm going to do this. I'm like, hey, you know, if you want to come back, you've been great. Let me know when your last day you want to make it, and I'll let people know that, you know, you wandered off, and happy trails, man. Like,
yep. Yeah, definitely don't, you know, compose an email. Yep, absolutely. That's how I am. I mean, I still talk to people from my first job, my, you know, second, third, fourth. Like, I've learned something at each job, and, you know, whether, like, I left, try to leave on, you know, good faith, even though, you know, if I wasn't happy or whatever the reason may be, like, I still value the connection and the things that I've learned there. So just trying to maintain those relationships, but yeah, I mean, you know, there's an extreme. You don't just compose an email and send it to all your clients saying, like, hey, I'm out, peace. keep it professional. And I think somebody, like, in the comments said that their boss actually did it on their behalf, as they messaged all of the clients and said, you know, hey, so this person's leaving, and they ended up getting a bunch of nice messages from the client. So that's kind of a cool way to do it as well. The client's thanking them for helping them over the years.
Yep. And speaking of departures, I think our last story is we grabbed this one from Pax8, but let's just talk in general. This is going on in the industry right now. There's some tech layoffs across the board, specifically in the MSP industry. We've seen announcements from some of the big players. This is one of those things that without being there, without being at that management level to know exactly why, it's a lot of speculation and it creates a lot of noise, but not necessarily news, because they're not percentages that are market movers. They didn't lose half their employees. So none of these companies did. They didn't even lose 20% of their employees. It's these small percentages. Now, part of me wonders, and this is where I'll go speculative on here, because I don't know. I'm not friends with the CEOs of these large companies. I know who they are, but some of them have bought me drinks. So I'll admit I do know them, but they certainly are not sharing this level of detail with Tom. So I can speak freely here. Years ago, they had the CEO, Jack Welch. He was CEO of GE. And one of the things that Jack Welch is famous for is you just fire the bottom 10% of people. This was like his legacy that he said. Mm-hmm. You just go around, you fire 10% of everybody. And I don't think that has been proven to be sound business logic. I think the company grew despite some of that behavior. But this started this whole cutthroat thing we did through the 80s and 90s of we just churn for the sake of churning. And my friends who have worked at very large corporate companies, they've been handed edicts before. My friend runs part of the cybersecurity division for a Fortune 500. And he goes, it's crazy. They don't tell me any parameters other than you need to cut 8% of your workforce. You mean 8%? Like who? They're like, whatever 8% equals out to be. Who is your problem is what they tell them. This is your new edict. Yeah. We just want some churn. Just figure out your lowest performers. And he's like, that's the meeting? Like, and people at the top go, see, I saved us 8% on that whole division. No, you just handed someone a problem who has to have a personal conversation with people. And without knowing the whole dynamics of it, I don't know if it's really needed, if they have that dead weight people they're actually carrying around. It's really become speculative from the outside because you just don't know unless someone's willing to really spill the beans on what's happening. So I always refer to these as noise, not news as much. They get mm-hmm. in there and all the companies do it at once. So they can all hit the news cycle. All the news articles can try to publish as much content as they want, and everyone's going to forget about it by next month and we won't even talk about it again.
Yep. Have you ever been a part of a layoff, or I mean, have you been in an imaginative role where you've had to let someone go?
No, I was lucky enough that I didn't. Even with my department, the only thing we did do that really sucked was I worked in the Ford supplier network, and we had to cut the company's cost for almost 60 days by 40% because Ford had this big incident with tires, and they didn't have enough tires, so they stopped their shipping lanes. And we were doing $40 million a year, and 91% of that revenue came from Ford, of that $41 million. Man. So all of a sudden, Ford's like, we're not paying you guys for almost a month. We're like, oh, what do we do about that? Because it turns out people still want to get paid, even if there's nothing to do. So everyone just took like a pay cut for a month, which was really suck. But it's better. We couldn't lay them off because by the time you filed for unemployment, you'd be back to work. So what do you do? The options are file for unemployment and get that back. We gave people options and things like that. In my department, we just took the pay cut because it was like, whatever, we're just going to lose. The other choice is getting laid off and getting your unemployment, which back then I think it used to took like 90 days before unemployment to give you the money. So it was a mess. Yeah,
there's no easy. Just
lays it on you. How about you? You've been laid off before like that?
I used to work at a call center, and the call center had multiple accounts, and I worked for an ISP account, and that ISP decided to pull out of this call center, and this ISP was the largest account of the call center. So there was about 80 or 90 of us that were laid off, and it sucked. They brought us in, corporate's in this meeting room, and they announced like, hey, this account is pulling out. So unfortunately, you have to lay out, and there's only five positions open on the other account. So, hey, we're sorry, but it is what it is. And you get jaded because I remember, and this is very, very early on in my career. I'm like 18, 19 at this point. And you're just like, well, screw these guys. Like they're up there, like all happy. Like they have their jobs and it doesn't affect them at all. Like glad to see them smiling and, not caring or whatever. I was fortunately one of the people, being as I was one of the top performers, that I was able to get a job on the other account, but it's never easy. And then, as it's pretty well known, I've been in the restaurant industry for many years and I was a general manager. So I've had to let my fair share of people go, and it's never fun. Yeah. I mean, there's some people that you don't miss letting go, but it's never fun letting anyone go because everyone's a human. Like, yeah, even if they suck at their job, like it's still like you're removing their source of income, but you still have to do it. Because that was another thing. I had some managers are like, I can't fire anybody, I just can't do it. I'm like, you have to. You're like, sometimes you have to. But I've never had to lay anyone off, right? Without a reason. Like I've had every time that I've had to let someone go, there's been a documented reason. And at the call center, it was so hard to fire, but I had a guy who was just like skipping calls. He just sit on hold so he wouldn't get calls. And I caught him, and like, I pulled all of his phone logs and everything. And I'm like, dead to rights. Like, okay, everyone gets one, right? let's write him up. And then, you know, if he does it again, he's gone. But no, because it's a corporate, you have to follow the verbal warning, the written warning, the final written warning. It's like, he kept doing it. He had five chances to not do it, and he kept doing it. But yeah, so luckily I've never had to lay anybody off. Everyone that I've had to let go has been for a reason, but I have been laid
off. Those are a little bit easier because you got some justification for it. So yeah.
No, well, we got time for go ahead. Let's see any closing statements.
One more story.
Time for one more. So
what's your pitch? This is it really comes down to one, you know, I got good with some of the soft skills, and one of the things I do, and maybe it's just me, maybe it's because I don't have the most professional attitude. I'll just throw that out there for anyone that knows me. I don't take myself or the business too seriously. I take cybersecurity, I take what I do serious, but I have a more lighthearted approach to it. And I will say on a call when I meet people, so tell me what sucks and how can I make it suck less? And those are sometimes just icebreakers. I don't like too much tension in the room, or, you know, we're the best in class, blah, 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 whatever. Our tool stack doesn't stink. The other people's do. Of course, I never make comparisons to the other people, whoever you were using. But I asked them, what sucks? What are your pain points? And those are good opening sales calls. One of the reasons I do it that way, and I'll make notes specifically what their big points are, because if they don't switch to me, I do the pitch and I don't hear from them for 2 weeks or whatever the predetermined time, like, hey, can I call you in 2 weeks? Can I call you in a week? The conversation starts with, does that insert name of thing you told me sucked, insert name of your pain point? Hey, still got the same pain point? Does that still suck? And can we have a go to try to make that suck a little less for you? And, you know, just being very lighthearted about it has always done well. It's pushing also the solution, not the details of it. Like, you got to speak business to them of how we're going to solve your pain points, not how I'm using insert name of top tools that most all the MSPs use will solve your pain points. It's how am I going to solve your pain point to make your business more efficient and ultimately more profitable and more secure? Those are the factors. Secure is going to cost you money. Anyone who tells me security is a moneymaker only is because they're selling the security. It is a burden of cost, and you're trying to figure out how to be efficient in the business for that. And we just let them know, you know, it's going to be a burden of cost. Locks on your door are a cost. Putting a vault door on the bank, that vault costs money, but the cost of not having it is greater. So you got to figure out how to sell that to them.
Yeah, I like, and especially in the MSP side of things, you know, just leading by the partnership and building the relationship, you know, first, and selling the product second is, you know, again, being the solutions provider. Don't come in there, like you said, like selling, oh, we got this product, you know, it's whatever, like selling the solution, selling the partnership, like, hey, we're here to help you, and leading by education. You know, even if you don't go with us, we can at least provide you value and you know, show you what, you know, could be better. Whether you go with us or not, I mean, we're at the end of the day trying to help you, and we're here to help you. You know, obviously we'd prefer you go with us, but this is, you know, something that we can do to help. I have, and my previous MSP, one of the sales guys that I'm really close with is now actually the sales manager. And I just had a couple of drinks with him last week, and we were talking about this exact conversation. Is he hired a new sales guy who came from selling farm equipment, and he's going around to his clients. And the first thing he does immediately is try to sell them, like, hey, you need this solution. Like, you need X, Y, Z. And he's like, you got to knock it off. Like, don't, like, in the MSP world, you got to build the relationship. Just listen to them. Just shut up and listen. and just like connect with them. And, you know, eventually through your conversations and getting to know them better, you, hey, you're having this issue. Well, we can help with that. And not just like, hey, here's a product, like, you need it. No, here's an issue, and here's how we're going to solve it. I did the same thing like way back in the day when I worked at Best Buy, like working retails. People would come in to buy a computer, and it was never like, oh, you need the Mac, the Dell, whatever. It's like, no, what are you trying to do? Like, are you gaming? Are you video editing? Oh, you're just a college kid and you need Word. You're like 90% of users where you're going to be on Facebook and you're going to edit Word documents. Like, cool. Yeah. Any of these will work. Like, it doesn't matter, right? They all have the same components on the inside. Pick which one looks pretty.
Something else. And Kevin Dukovitz points out that StoryBrand does a great job of conveying that concept. The whole storytelling and what they refer to as the hero's journey. A lot of people get this wrong. Yeah. You will structure it in the hero's journey. you're not the hero. I hate to break the news to you, person, salesperson who thinks they're the hero of the day. You're not. Your goal is to provide the sword, the shield, the armor for our hero so they can defeat the problems that they have in their business. You are an enabler of them. You are the assistant to them. And that's why they're buying your armor, your shield, and your sword. You're not the hero. You're not the guy walking around in the yard. You're not the knight. You're making them. You're taking your tools and enabling the business to use them more efficiently, secure their systems, be able to be efficient as a business, you know, optimization. The further you get, the more maturity level your company has, the more you go, well, I didn't just provide you a tool. I provide you a tool that's sharper, that's faster, that makes your staff more efficient in getting their job done. I didn't. You guys are the hero. I just gave you a really sharp sword to cut through the BS, and then I gave you a shield to protect it so you don't get fished and hacked and everything else. That's the concept you should be following when you're helping them along. It isn't how great your tools are. It's how great they'll be with your tools.
Enabling their, enabling their business. Like, we're just an extension of your business, right? Yep. Like,
That's your accountant. The accountant's not the hero. The fact that they were able to shift you in a position so you paid the least amount in taxes and made the most amount in profit and did the best thing you could with all of your assets, that's what the accountant does. And we're kind of the same thing. We're going to look at some of the inefficiencies. We're going to have to secure it so people don't take the things you have or the things you value or disrupt your business, which has a high cost to it. And we want to enable your success. That's the whole journey we want to take you on. At least that's how I concept it. I don't know. What's your pitch? Kevin says,
We're very much,
throw up there Kevin's thing.
There we go. It's an ongoing relationship. And I don't know what the stat is, but you've seen, like, especially with the MSP sales, is you might make a first contact with somebody, a client, and I don't think you close on them until, years later, like whatever, it's a year or two. Like, some of them take forever to become a client. So, it's very rare that you're going to go somebody cold calling or whatever and like instantly get the client. So again, building the relationship, trusted advisors, leading by education. And when they do have a need or something, then being in that position where you can provide that solution. So the patience inside of that. But the pitch is, we just, hey, this is what we do. This is how we can help you and your business. The tools we use, I'm not going to go to a cake shop or whatever and be like, hey, make sure you're using Betty Crocker, like whatever. I want a cake, right? I don't care how you make it. I just want the cake. Listen. And sell yourself, I guess, and the solutions, not the products.
Yep. And absolutely. All right. I think that wraps it up here. This is MS Community Live, episode 32. Leave your thoughts and comments down below. Love hearing from all of you, seeing what we were right about, what we were wrong about, what you have a different opinion about.
Absolutely.
That's what YouTube comments are for. Share your difference of opinion. Grab that caps lock, start mashing buttons.
Don't forget to join us in the MSP Media Network Discord. Yes. Much like the MSP Dispatch, if you guys see something in the community that you want us to discuss, we do these shows every Friday. So go ahead and throw a Reddit thread in the Discord and we can discuss it live.
Absolutely. Thanks.
This has been a broadcast of the MSP Media Network.